Welcome to the Rich Salon Owner Podcast, the go-to audio place for any salon, spa, or business owner who wants to make more money, serve more clients, and find more freedom in their life. Here's today's episode.
Hi folks, this is Greg Milner from Worldwide Salon Marketing. If you're one of our members, you'll know that there's more to pricing your products and services than just looking around at what your competitors are doing and doing exactly the same. You'll also know my thoughts about the only pricing strategy most business owners know anything about, discounting. Almost every salon and spa owner does it, and they do it because they're desperate to drive sales. But as far as I'm concerned, discounting is the slippery slope to business oblivion. It's evil. It trains your customers to expect it, it attracts penny-pinching customers, and it takes money out of your wallet. As you already know, there are lots of ways to package your products and services, actually increase your prices, and have your customers queuing up down the street. We teach that sort of strategy all the time, but there are lots of even more sophisticated strategies about how to price your services. In fact, the issue of how to price things is worth a whole seminar in itself. I find it fascinating. And I'm sure you will too when you listen to my special guest. Many of you will have heard of the great American marketer Dan Kennedy. Few, though, will have heard of Dan's co-author of a new book, No BS Price Strategy. Jason Mars is that author and price strategy guru, and he joins me on this call from his home in New York. Jason, thanks for giving us your time. Can you give us a little background about you and how you came to know so much about the tricks and techniques of pricing goods and services?
Yeah, absolutely. And first, just let me say thanks for having me on the call. My story is kind of a long, strange journey to where I got to where I am today. I grew up in business. I'm one of these guys that I've never not been around it. I grew up in agriculture, farming, and ranching. I was the kid in school who was always selling things. I've had businesses before I even got out of high school, then had them all the way through college with, you know, different things from selling candy to pool cues to promoting nightclubs. And going on forward, that just kept happening in my life. And I got into healthcare shortly after college and education and got into a business that literally competed with free. And what it's a speech-language pathology practice. And here in Westchester, they have a deal where it doesn't matter how much money you have. You can be Oprah, you can be Bill Gates, it really doesn't matter. Your child, if they have a delay, they get this service for free. My therapist, my top therapist, is $250 an hour. The people who come to us, we have people that come from an hour and a half, 2 hours away, and they'll come two or three times a week. These things can go on, looking at these types of disorders. You may have a short one that's a few months, but they can go on for years and years. So this is a very significant difference between that and free. And that kind of led me into getting more involved in pricing, with hooking up with Dan Kennedy, who you mentioned earlier, and getting more involved with helping businesses really break down the barriers and the thinking of commoditization to then look at their real value that they're providing to their buyers and then collect on that value through the form of price. And that's sort of it in a nutshell.
Thank you for that. There's a chapter in your new book, which I believe is being released in June. The chapter is called Discounting Without Damage. Can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you were saying coming in, most people, they try to compete on price, and, you know, they either come in and they're trying to be a low-price provider or they're running discounts all the time trying to drive people through the door. And there's a lot of problems with this. You know, even some people that try to do premium pricing will try to do a lot of discounts. And discounts do a few things. One of the first things they do is they undermine your price integrity, which, you know, what that kind of means is it makes it hard to maintain a higher price. So you end up going lower and lower and lower eventually, or dying sort of a death by a thousand cuts. The other thing that it can do is it can literally create animosity in your buyers. So if your buyers have been paying X amount of money for this service and all of a sudden it's being discounted, they're wondering, why wasn't this always discounted? Why was I paying this low price? And then the final thing that discounting can do is that it can literally make the offering not perform as well. So, you know, whether it's going in and doing something with beauty or, you know, massages or whatever, it can make that not seem as valuable as it would at the higher price. They've done some different studies with it. They've done it with over-the-counter drugs. You know, you put an aspirin next to the generic, and they run the test on the aspirin at the full price. The generic does much less price, it's the exact same product, but the generic doesn't perform as well in tests. They did, I don't know if you read Predictably Irrational with Dan Ariely. I forget what university he's out of, but they did a study with Sobe, which is an energy drink they have here in the States. And they have one that's supposed to make you more intelligent. And what they did is they randomized the class to make it where, you know, you went to a group that would be smarter than the others. One group didn't drink anything. One group went to the student union and bought full price. The other group bought it at a discount. The group that bought it at a discount did worse than everybody else in the class on the test. The only difference was the price. So that's, you know, these are some of the reasons. Yeah, right? You know, these are some of the reasons you have to be really careful when you start playing with discounts. And, you know, one of the things I try to teach people is how to, you know, discounts are powerful. They can be very useful in business, but you want to try to look to do some other things first. They shouldn't be your first trick that you use to get people through the door, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. One of the things you talk about in the book is price and fee failures. Can you give some examples of that?
Sure. You know, some of the big price and fee failures that you have come from this belief that I'm not good enough to get this type of price. That's a biggie. Another biggie is using traditional standards for pricing, such as industry norms or cost plus even. You know, you look at something like industry norm, which arguably is the most prevalent form of pricing, even for people that use something more sophisticated like cost plus, they still take a look around the industry and say, okay, well, I'm going to take something right about here, as opposed to really looking at the value that's being provided. And that causes a failure in the pricing. You know, even cost plus, you know, which is a long standby pricing model, what it looks at is cost plus a reasonable profit. Well, what exactly is a reasonable profit? If you're not understanding your buyer, you can't know what that is. And what happens when you get in a market that's really hot or you get in a market that's really cold? You know, it doesn't account for these things. So, you know, again, you have to kind of come back to where does the value stand with the buyer.
We get a lot of questions from our members around pricing and how should I charge for this or what should I charge for that. What is a great way to determine what you should charge for something?
There are a few ways to do it. The thing I would recommend is rolling something out that you already know they want, as opposed to starting from scratch or coming out with something and then trying to price it. And one of the ways you can do that is it's a method called, it's ultimately called price down costing, and which is a little bit of a misnomer. But the way it works is you're going out and looking to find a need, you know, for whatever it is you may be looking to offer, for whatever your audience may be in any industry, frankly. And you look to find what their needs are. You look to kind of find out what the value drivers are and what value they put on it, how much money they'd be willing to pay for it. And you set your price sort of based on that. Now, the big caveat with that is you can't expect them to be really honest with you. So it's just sort of a starting point to find a bottom line to make sure you could do it at that point and make it profitable before you start getting into it and then trying to push the price upward. You know, and the reason I say you can't expect them to be real honest because it's not in their best interest to tell you the maximum price they're going to pay. Because in any situation when you're exchanging value, and that's ultimately what a sales process is, it's an exchange of value. You exchange whatever it is that you have created for their dollars or, you know, whatever the local currency may be. You make that exchange. And if they don't see the value, they're not going to give you the money. And if you don't agree that their money's enough, you're not going to give it to them. So, you know, you've got to work that out beforehand.
Yeah, and we teach our members a great deal about how to package their services with extra added value things that don't actually cost them much to provide but have great added value. But it's a concept that so many find difficult to understand, this concept of providing value rather than trying to compete on price. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. People have a lot of hang-ups with price. And you know what you're saying with packaging, that's one of the good ways to get around discounting, you know, particularly if you, for some reason, have, you know, people who come in who want to negotiate. You can literally move them from package A to package B to package C, which strips out value and strips out your costs without having to negotiate on your price.
Yeah. What about giving away things for free? You make a great deal in the book about, there's a chapter in there called The Nasty Cancer of Free. What do you mean by that?
Free is a nasty cancer. It's what it does. It creates the entitlement mentality, and you know, particularly in information and the online world, you're seeing just tremendous amounts of damage and downward pressure that's being caused by the things that are being put out for free. You know, you look at somebody who's in a salon or a spa, they can use these things, not necessarily the giveaways, but as far as the literal product, but you could use information itself, which allows them to position themselves as experts. You know, but on the flip side of that, there's somebody else who's trying to sell that information that is then going to hurt them. And that's, you know, kind of the relationship that's happening with free now. And it's you know, it's a little scary to be around. And it creates this entitlement mentality. We had up here a year or so ago in Queens, we had a group of kids that got on the bus and stabbed the bus driver because they wanted a free ride. You know, if you go back to the 60s here, you had people that were rioting over concerts because they wanted them for free. They said, it's music, it should be free. No thought was given to the fact of these people actually spent a lot of time to learn how to create this music. There's a lot of electricity going into this show, a lot of promotion that went into the show and all these costs. The more the entitlement mentality builds, the more it wants. And that's why it's so cancerous, in my opinion.
Jason, there's a great deal of angst in the industry, in our industry, salons and spas, and I'm sure in many others, about these daily deal websites that seem to be proliferating all over the world, Groupon, Scoopon, Jump On It, Spreets, etc. And a lot of our members are telling us that they have been not so much conned, but persuaded by these sites that they should do deals with them, and then finding that it comes back to bite them on the bum. Because they've suddenly got 200-300 new deal-seeking customers who they know are never going to come back. How can they compete with these daily deal coupons that seem to sell in their thousands?
Ultimately, what you want to do, if you're wanting to get completely away from that and not deal with that type of mentality at all, is, for lack of a better way to put it, make yourself a local celebrity. So you're the it salon, you're the it spa. And you're that because you've managed to get yourself into the media. You're a thought leader. You're out there talking about what's going on. And this can be a little bit labor-intensive, but it's actually not that difficult usually to get yourself into those positions. So you make yourself sort of a category of one, you know, because if you want to go to this place, which is just an unbelievable place to go to, then all of a sudden price isn't a question anymore if you make it the place to go. Part of that, at least here in the States, you know, we have a situation that's happening where we're becoming more and more and more connected, but people are becoming more and more isolated. It's a strange paradox. But when you give people a sense of connectedness and a sense of a place where they can go and belong, you know, whether it's the philosophical ideas or whatever else it is, it's bringing them together, you can really make yourself that category of one for that particular group. You know, it comes down to that, making yourself for some one as opposed to this big broad shot of trying to be for everyone. And that's the best way. It's, you know, probably not the most detailed explanation by any stretch, but that's ultimately it in a nutshell of what you've got to try to accomplish if you want to get away from not dealing with the discounting or all the bargain seekers.
Yeah, I guess it also speaks to the concept of commoditization, doesn't it?
Sure.
Where the customers or the prospective customers see one hair salon as the same as another hair salon, as the same as another hair salon, and they just shop on price alone, whereas if you take price out of the equation and make yourself somehow different and exclusive, then price becomes much less of an issue.
Sure. Sure. You know, anything, I don't care what it is, can be commoditized. And whatever it is that's being sold, there is a low-priced version of it somewhere. And whatever your listeners are buying, there is something that they could be buying cheaper of whatever it is that they're going to buy. Why aren't they buying the cheaper one? You know, and you have to start getting into this thinking of why not be more expensive, because it is possible. You know, the reality of it is, I very strongly believe that there is no such thing as a commodity in the literal sense. There's only commodity thinking. The minute that you decide not to think of whatever it is you offer as being a commodity. You liberate a new, different, and better price possibility. You know, some of the things I talk about in the book, one of the things is oxygen. It's the most abundant element on Earth. Makes up 90-something percent of water. Take a deep breath, fresh air, you know. You've got oxygen. You don't need to pay for it, but there's oxygen bars here in the States that are charging people $60 an hour to go breathe. You've got a company who also is in the book in Colorado, and who they're ultimately targeting is people who are going into the mountains and, you know, active lifestyle types. And they've got this little device called a pod, and they sell for $19.99. But when you do the math on it and how much oxygen is actually in it and how many breaths is within that amount of time, it comes out to about $450 an hour that you're paying for this thing if you were to breathe that for an hour. So that's the most commoditized thing on the planet. It is the very definition of a commodity, but here it is, somebody who is selling it for a very, very profound premium. And I don't begrudge them for that. I don't make fun of them for that. It's not something that I really understand, but I'm not a big outdoorsy person. If I were, I might be all over it. And, you know, so I guess part of the point with that is you have to kind of start getting your head around the types of money that's out there, the types of things that are important to people that they will pay for, and figuring out how you can align your business with it. Businesses are like, they're like fingerprints. There's no two that are exactly alike. And those differentiation points are what you can use to really separate yourself from everybody else and get paid for it. And that's what you should be doing.
I think it's brilliant that a company can actually sell air.
I think it's fantastic. I'm telling you. You know, you look at coffee, there's another one, and everybody talks about Starbucks. Starbucks is cheap. There's the Jamaican coffee, Joblem, goes for, you know, you look at Starbucks. Starbucks, you go to the store here, it's $10 a pound. Joblem, you can't even get it here, you got to order it in, it's $35 a pound. Then you've got Kopi Luwak, it's civet coffee, and which is a nice way of saying coffee beans that have been eaten by a weasel, pooped out, and they're collecting it and selling it to people for $350 a pound.
I've seen that. I have actually seen that. I've been to a place in Bali where they feed ferrets coffee, and the ferret excretes the coffee, and then they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
It's ferret poo.
Yeah,
it's just ferret poo.
They've got scientists that are actually working on trying to mimic this thing's digestive enzymes so they can mass produce this coffee. I mean, the way they're trying to mass produce it now is like you're talking about feeding it to this little weasel. The way it originally came about, the belief behind it, why it was supposed to be so special originally, was that these things came out to the coffee plantation and stole all the best, you know, coffee berries or coffee beans, and that's why they would fall to collect them. And people happily and cheerfully pay for this. Again, I don't understand it. Doesn't make it wrong. You know, whatever's your thing. It's not my thing, but it's somebody's thing. And the businesses that are catering to them aren't doing a wrong thing by giving them what they want. They're doing what they should be doing.
It's amazing, isn't it, what people will pay for. And you know, most salon owners and spa owners, it's more of a mindset around price that stops them from charging decent amounts of money for things. I mean, 30 years ago, somebody made bazillions of dollars by selling rocks.
Even aside from pet rocks, I mean, let's just look at jewelry. I mean, let's just think about jewelry for a minute. This is a shiny rock. People are paying lots of money for little shiny rocks. You know, it's big business. The beers, the diamond is forever. It's a rock.
It's a rock.
Still a rock. You don't need it in the sense of you're going to die without it. But, you know, I guess Maslow, you know, and the needs hierarchy. And your needs actually go beyond that. And that's part of where people get hung up. They say, oh, well, you only need food, water, shelter. Yeah, that's not exactly right. You need friendship. You need the sense of belonging. You need to feel like you're accomplishing something. You need to feel like you've arrived. And there's these different levels of it going up and ends in self-actualization. And, yeah, you know, if it comes down to food and shelter or the shiny rock, most people are going to go with the food and shelter. But as you are able to fulfill these needs, these other ones arrive. You know, people can't survive very well in isolation. they get depressed when they don't feel like they've accomplished something. And yeah, that may be a hollow material sign of success, you know, whether it's a diamond or, you know, the car I drive or maybe the one you drive or even, you know, going and getting your hair done. These, you know, may not be things they may be things you could argue you don't need, but they do. They reinforce people's self-esteem. They help them to feel better about who they are, and that's an important need that needs to be met.
There's a chapter that you've written in the book called How Do You Set Your Prices? Give us some examples.
Sure. You know, this comes back a little bit of the discussion we were having earlier. You know, most people, what they do is they do, you go from wild-ass guests where they just kind of pull it out of their butt and they say, okay, here's what I'm going to try. And then it moves up from there to the industry norm model where they take a look around and say, okay, well, this is what everybody else is doing, so I'm going to try something in this, never mind that they have no idea what these other people's costs really are, so they don't know if they can make that work, and never mind the fact that something in the middle just traps you into mediocrity. And then move up from that to cost plus, cost down pricing, and some of these other things. And part of what happens here with this is people miss the purpose of their price. You know, they get caught up in these models, and there's a lot more than that. I mean, we cover, I think, in the book, I think I went through like five of them. I've got, you know, another 40 or so that I'm aware of that are definable, you know, not even counting getting real blended in their approaches. But looking at purpose, and these are things that people would call traditional pricing models or strategies, would be like skimming, sequential skimming, penetration pricing, and neutral pricing. But what these really speak to is, where do you want your price to go? I argue that your high-end pricing goes into skinny because you need a market that is not bothered by price. And what skimming does is it seeks to skim the cream off the top of the market. You know, if you look at it, gets its name from milk before we got with homogenization. When you left it sitting out on the counter, the cream rose to the top. And skimming seeks to skim that off. Sequential skimming does the same thing, but when it burns out that top layer of the market, it moves down. It drops the price down. Of course, where it then runs into the trouble is people figure it out. They know it's coming, you know, so they start to wait it out. So then, you know, what the business has to do if it wants to make this purpose work is it has to put up something called fences, you know, when you're thinking pricing in the geek talk of pricing language. And what that does is keeps the buyers from really taking advantage of that. So you look at electronics, there tends to be a wait time between when this, you know, the new 3D TVs come out, the prices really start dropping. Or the other thing they'll do is strip out some features as these things start moving down into the consumer level of pricing as opposed to the early adopters. And going across to penetration pricing, which is where a lot of people try to kind of set their purpose, is trying to grab the most market share possible is what they think. They're going to go in and undercut the market, and this is how they're going to win. What you understand, you know, you think about Walmart, and this is kind of a Walmart approach. What people don't understand when they start trying to do something like that, when you look at somebody like Walmart, they have a profound technological advantage. They've got this unbelievable logistics capability to get things from here to there, point A to point B, to keep it managed, to know exactly where everything is. And they have this ability to really put a lot of pressure on their suppliers. So if you're going to compete on price, you need to be able to have that technological advantage to allow you to be the lowest price, because there's not really any glory in being number two. To do it right without being destructive to the market, one example that I can give would be Lexus. And when they first came out, there was a gap in the market. You know, so in many ways it could be called penetration, in other ways it could be called skimming. Because what they did is they found a hole between the top of the low-end market and the bottom of the high-end market. And they went in and plugged into it and pulled people up and pulled people down and created a whole new category of cars. So that's the strategies that people use, how they set their prices and the purposes in a confusing little nutshell.
One of the big mistakes I see being made, Jason, is people pricing their products and services according to what their competitors do, and let's disregard for a moment what the competitors' costs might be or might not be, but they figure, well, you know, the average price for this kind of service is X, I'll charge X and see how I go. And what they end up being is kind of middle ground, And what we try to teach them is that there's absolutely no point in being average. You've either got to be the most expensive or the cheapest, but there's no advantage to being in the middle. Would you agree with that tactic?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you're stuck in the middle, you're stuck to mediocrity. I mean, in reality, when you look at what the average business gets, it's bankruptcy. So is that really where you want to be? You need to be something special, whether you're going to be high-priced or low-priced. And for me, I mean, when I look at something, I think about salons and I think about spas, and it's something I have been around quite a bit. Low price just doesn't really appeal to me with that. You know, I think about it, and this is someplace when you're going to a spa, you're going there to be pampered. When you're going to get something done with your hair, you don't want it to look like crap. You want it to look really good. You want to be going to somebody you can trust. You know, and with all the other services, the same sort of thing. Again, I would push them to go upwards with the price and not try to be a low price, but definitely don't be in the middle.
Absolutely, and no woman is going to boast about having had a $10 haircut.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Because she then opens herself up to cracks like, well, yeah, it looks like it. We've actually had our member salons in situations where a salon down the street is doing haircuts for $10, and what we've advised them to do is put a sign out the front that says, we fix $10 haircuts.
Oh, absolutely. That's very smart. Very smart. That's a smart strategy, and you know, something that else that people need to think about is the high price can have cachet. You know, there's something to be said for a high price. It's, you know, it's a point that Dan and I disagree about a little bit. You know, he talks about delinking what you're selling from the price. And I argue that it's not a delinking that needs to happen. It's a different set of math that needs to happen. Because you look at something, there's a wine company, and I probably butcher their name, but the name of the bottle, as far as I can tell, is Petrus. And it sells for $5,000 a bottle. Now, you could probably pour whatever you wanted to in the bottle itself. Doesn't matter. It's not that the price is delinked from it. The price is a big part of it. You know what I mean? It's the bottle, it's the package, it's the name, and it's the price.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, nobody's going to... That's how door-to-door salesmen can sell vacuum cleaners for $2,000 when you can buy a $50 vacuum cleaner that'll do pretty much the same job. But nobody's going to boast about a $50 vacuum cleaner.
Sure. You know, and again, you know, I brought up cars earlier. You know, you get the Kia, it'll take you from point A to point B. You know, how you get you a go-kart, it'll take you from point A to point B. You don't need, you know, the Acuras, the Mercedes, the Bugattis. You know, Bugatti's a $2 million car. Do you need it as far as getting from point A to point B? Not necessarily, but as far as reaffirming who you are and little bragging points, yeah, kind of need it.
Yeah. You talk also in the book about being beware of staff sabotage of price strategy. What do you mean by that?
Staff is the biggest trick. You know, the first big trick is getting, as you were saying earlier, the owner to get their head around what is really possible. You know, but they've got a lot more right in them. This is their business, so you can get their head around it usually easier than the staff. The staff tend to have a lot of reasons for not going higher price. You know, they've got all the same hang-ups without quite the same benefit of moving up to the higher price, particularly if you've turned them loose with discounting. Breaking the discounting habit is an incredibly difficult thing in a whole topic itself. But they will absolutely sabotage you. They will say things. We have it happen here. I've run into companies that they will tell people, oh, well, you can get this down the street for less. Really? You sure about that? Is it exactly the same thing, or are you just not happy with what's happening here with the price? And these are the types of things that the business owners really got to keep their eye on. Make sure whether or not it's happening. If it is happening, get them on board as quickly as possible, or get them out as quickly as possible before they have a chance to poison the well.
Yeah, we call that price embarrassment. And we've often heard stories from our members that they've overheard the staff telling a customer, we do sell this thing or service, but it's far too expensive, and I think you should take this one.
Sure.
You know, it's unbelievable. And as Dan and Bill talk about a lot, the sales prevention department.
You know, and there's just a lot of different ways this can happen, and like you're talking about. Like, you know, and also you go into a store and they give you a coupon that you had no idea was going to be there. You were happily about to pay full price. Somebody hands you a coupon. All right, hell, if you want to not get paid as much, that's fine. Giving away free services. That's coming straight out of your pocket. And something else that a lot of business owners don't understand, you know, you can talk about the difference between gross and net. And a lot of people pay attention to gross without paying enough attention to net. And, of course, net swapping need to really be watching because that's, you know, what pays the bills is the net. But when you lose $10, $100, whatever, off the top line, that number tends to magnify on the bottom line. You know, it's just the way money math works. And most people don't think about that. They go, oh, well, you know, it's just this amount of money. Well, you know, when this starts adding up, it starts being a multiple on that bottom line. So whereas you were given this 10% discount on top, that ends up being a 20% discount on bottom that's coming out of your take-home pay.
Yep, yep. And that's one that most people let slip through.
Absolutely. Big time.
Dan writes about why not charge people to buy from you. What does that mean?
Well, you know, several ways this can be done. Membership, you know, so you're paying a membership fee, and that's definitely applicable to the salons and to the spas, and we see it done here a lot. Maybe something you're even recommending, but they're paying a fee to be a part of your organization, to then have the ability to pay you money to buy your stuff. You know, whether it's, you know, selling haircuts or whether it's, you know, selling products or selling books. There's a company in England called the Folio Society that you got to pay a membership to buy really high-priced books, and that is charging people to give you money.
I love the concept.
Yeah, me too. And people will happily do it. When you get, you know, something else to think about, another incentive besides just the money factor with charging more, doing it the right way, is you move into a better clientele that is more likely to do what you want them to do, they're more likely to be a better consumer, they're more likely to be a better referrer, they're more likely to be more loyal. There's a lot of reasons besides just the bottom line of today's money to go after a more affluent market.
Sure is. Jason, been brilliant talking to you. Tell me about the book and where people can get it.
The book is No BS Price Strategies. It goes way more in depth than of course, we can do in this short amount of time. And I think it can really have a profound impact on how people look at price. It, of course, is going to give them some strategies, a lot of takeaways, a lot of things they can do. But it's also going to help open their eyes to what's really possible with price. It releases June 1st. You can pre-order it now on Amazon. And of course, we don't have control of Amazon's pricing, and they have discounted it heavily for pre-release. So you can go buy it there. I mean, the book normally sells for $17.95 as its list price. Right now, last time I looked, it was $11 and something on Amazon. So if you want to go get a screaming deal on it, now would be a good time to do that.
Well, why didn't you price the book at $189?
Yeah, you know, if we'd have self-published it, we could have done that really easily. But, you know, when you go through the real publishers and McGraw-Hill's the distributor on it, they kind of have control over all that, so we didn't get a whole lot of say in it.
Maybe you should have taught them something about price strategy.
Right. There's a reason these guys are suffering in the marketplace.
Jason, thank you very much. I'm sure our members have got a lot out of what you've said, and I look forward to the book coming out and learning more about how to charge for what we do.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you having me on the call.
Thanks, Jason.
That was Jason Mars, author and entrepreneur. And if you're looking for more entrepreneurial strategies for your business, if you need help with your online or offline marketing, head over to worldwidesalonmarketing.com and get my free ebook and audiobook, Rich Salon Owner, and you'll find a ton of other free resources there as well. This is Greg Milner. I hope you'll join me on our next podcast. Stay tuned.